I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two little guys talking about life, that's good tangling.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
I'm Brad Cummings.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson.
Still?
Still? What do you think? How's that going to change?
You're always going to be you, and I'm always going to be me, and that's great.
And we just want
but
people
someone,
to
But someone sent me a link to get my hard drive unfried. I think it was you that needs it.
Oh, and you sent it to me, and I've already corresponded with the person. So,
oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, people trying to fix my hard drive.
Thank you for all the help out there, nice people.
The only problem is my hard drive has been recycled somewhere by Apple. I have a new hard drive in the machine, and they told me it was not a software issue. It was a hardware issue.
Did they gratis you that? Were they kind and just replaced the machine?
Well, the fact that I paid for 3 years of Apple Care.
There you go.
Yeah, it was under warranty still.
There you go. Well, hey, smart move there.
Didn't
buddy.
Cost me anything, but, you know, sometimes.
You lost everything. It cost you something.
I generally don't like betting on things I buy are going to go bad. Usually I don't get service contracts, but, you know, because it's a laptop and I do carry it all over the planet with
yes,
me.
Yes. So I get that.
I did think it probably was prudent for me to get it covered. It did. It worked out, so it's all good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
We're about to go to New York, aren't we?
We're headed for New York. I'm headed Saturday. You're not going over till Monday.
Yeah.
But we'll be there Tuesday.
It'll be fun.
And fly back Tuesday night.
Yeah. Just a one-day trip for me. That's
don't
all great.
You hate flying that far for one day?
I do. But that's life.
It is life.
You know? Sometimes okay. You go a long ways for a short flight.
Well, I'm going to spend the weekend out on Manhattan Island with some friends that I connected with a while back and... going to be speaking at some artists and entrepreneurs meeting on Monday night about the whole Shaq story and what was behind all that and how we took a book and drove it to the top of the bestseller list, which I think is so sad that people think we actually did that in spite of the fact that we're saying God did a wonderful thing here. He really did.
He did, and he does deserve the credit. He gets the kudos.
And that doesn't mean there wasn't a lot of hard work put in behind the scenes. We just didn't like print the book and put it on the porch. And
I think the reality is everyone's looking for, well, you know, can you just do it for anything? And it's like, I don't think so at all.
No, people, that's, I think, where people really misunderstand how some of these things happen. And we get authors throwing books at us, and they're convinced they've written the next Shaq. Everyone has written the next Shaq, and because no one wants to produce it for them. And, you know, someday someone really has. And hopefully it'll come our way and we'll see it and go, wow, we'd like to help with this too. The fact is we're getting sent an awful lot of material that we just can't. I keep telling we don't have the staff time. Please stop doing this. We don't. And I know it's conflicting for people. People, you know, I got one really bad, you know, attitudes. One guy wrote and just said, you know what, you guys make it to the top of the industry, and then what, you just don't care about the little people anymore.
I'm going, we're yeah. still the little people.
That's it. That's it. That's exactly
I'm
what
I'm still the little people. I care about the little people all the time.
Man.
I didn't wear any big boy pants. It's like I still feel like the little people.
Yeah, and I understand the frustration. Everybody's got a book. Everyone's got a book in the publishing industry.
I think one out of three people on the planet are writing a book.
It's
all their personal memoirs. And you know what? You know what that tells me? There is such a desire in people to be known and to be able to tell their story. I think that's great.
Not to be known in the whole celebrity crappy thing. But
they want
just
to be known on the inside.
I've got a story to tell, and yeah. I hope people will care about hearing it.
I just wish that there was that sense of validation that my capacity to know and tell my story to my neighbor is just as valid as whether it gets put in a book. I mean, I just go like, you know
right.
what?
But most of these I get anyway are saying, you know, all my neighbors are encouraging me to write this story. And
that's awesome.
It is awesome. What I would, just as from a writing perspective, if you're one of those out there going, I've got my book, I'm waiting to send it to Wayne, is that it memoirs, I think, only work if you're famous. Most people don't care about the memoir. You may have the greatest story in the world.
Memoirs of Joe the Neighbor.
Of what? No, you might have the best story in the world about God getting you some horrible crisis or some wonderful thing going on with your kids or whatever. But you've got to tell that story in a way that is other than in the sixth grade, I did this. And the eighth grade, I did this. And then my senior year. It, just the linear story is not creative enough. You've got to find a hook inside what you're writing that literally, and I, this is my standard for at least what I try to do. I don't think I always do it well, but I think you really have to hold a reader's attention from page one until page 185 or whenever you're going to quit. You really have to give them. Everybody's looking for an excuse to put this book down, and I don't know that I need to finish this book. And you really have got to have enough drama, enough compelling content that you're literally drawing the reader through every page of the book. I think that's what makes a good book.
Yeah.
I can tell when I'm reading a good book by this. As I'm getting toward the end of it, I regret it, and I actually slow down reading it. There are some books that just, I can't wait to be done with this. I can't wait to get it out of the way.
Finished.
But even great dramatic books that I read, and I'm dying to know how this sorts out, I find myself slowing down because I don't want to stop spending time with these characters.
Sure.
I'm enjoying my time with them.
Totally get that.
I was that way on the Jake and John book. It was so hard to finish that book. I loved spending my afternoons with Jake and John, writing their conversations. I absolutely loved it. And as I knew we were coming to the end of that book, it was like, I don't want to finish this. I love spending time, even though they're only in my head. I love spending time with these guys. And now I've got to find some other guys to go spend some time with so I can redo that. Anyway.
I do think it's wonderful that there is the resurgence of people wanting to hear stories and wanting to be able to tell their stories. Because I do think that, you know, when you read through the scriptures and you actually read it as a story, not as some like a textbook, the thing comes absolutely screaming alive. And you just go like, wow. The drama. I mean, it's like to be able to even read the Old Testament. It's like if you read it with all the – it's like if they took all the verses out, the numbers, I think more likely people would read it in the form of how they would read a book. And there's a drama going on there that is just glorious.
In a lot of places, that's true. I think you could take all the numbers out of Leviticus and it would still be Leviticus.
It's a recipe or something.
I'm just finishing up working my way through Samuel and Kings again, and I tell you, by the time you get past David and Solomon,
they're just chronicling.
They're just chronicling. This king, he was horrible. He was evil. He did all kinds of bad stuff. Just, the next king, this was a good guy. He did what guy, he got rid of all the shrine prostitutes, and he did all that stuff. But his son was evil, so took Israel back to where they came from.
It's just the prophet's, report cards.
Yeah, well. It was. I was so glad. That's one of the things I was rushing to get the end of. I need a fix in the New Testament. I'm going back. I finished 2 Kings last night, so I'm back to something more valuable.
But I think one of the things that I'm enjoying is I think it is a pretty fantastic exercise to be able to kind of look in your life and go, gosh, Lord, what are you saying in and through me? Because I think tucked up inside each and every person is a unique, wonderful facet of God that perhaps through the telling of their life, you're going to see something that is not just generic that you can just put. That's why, you know, when people are like, well, can you guys just do this with that? It's like, you know what? I don't think anything in God works that way. God doesn't say, well, this is my plan for every last thing and every last person. I just go like, our fingerprints are not alike. There's nothing about us. We're all unique and wonderful. And to be able to celebrate the fact that, like, healing. It's like, sure, I believe in the doctrine of how God heals and what goes. But the reality is it's not a doctrine. It's a gift to each individual when it happens. And I don't get to control exactly how that happens.
No, and I've tried.
I know. I've done the seminars that would give you the suggestion you could.
I gave you the illusion that you could if you were just like me. But yeah.
And it's like, I look at that and it's like, you know, God is at work in each and every situation. And it's a challenge to go, Lord, what are you doing here? Not just, I'm going to presume you're doing this. Yeah. But Lord, what are you doing here? And to be able to see that story of his hand and his handiwork unfolding, that is glorious.
Yeah, and we had a conversation with a film producer a while back. And one of the things he said I thought was interesting. He said, you know how many people God's given a movie to?
Yeah.
With no way to actually get the movie made.
Right.
That God has great ideas, but no process to actually make it. And I think of that with, you know, the whole publishing thing. And, I, you know, people, it's easy to say, God told me to do this, but now I don't know what else to do with it. I need somebody else to take it and do it for me. That's what we've always looked at, publishers or movie producers or whatever. So I just get an idea. What I also want to hear, what I want to say to people is, don't just get what God's given you to do in terms of what you write, or, you know, if you want to make a movie or whatever. Don't, it's not just what you do. There's also got to be the way in which you do it. If God's given you something to say,
genuinely,
He'll give you a venue in which to say it. He will. I think what those people look at, and what I used to look at as a writer for a long time, is the people that have the venue have nothing to say. So it looks like God gives the venue to morons. Or as someone said to me last week, when I was having a little bit of a tussle over something having to do with our house here, and I was a little bit of a fight about getting it done, they're just saying, you know what, it's just somebody made a stupid mistake. I'm going, well, I understand stupid mistakes. I just don't really want to be the victim of them. And they said, well, you better get used to it because God seems to be especially fond of idiots. And I said, what? This was a business person. This was not a God conversation. I'm going, what? Well, He made so many of them, He must love them. And whatever worked, that worked
for
me.
That's funny. I was like, whoa, the light bulb came on there.
I just laughed. How are you going to yell at customer service now when they're just telling you God must love idiots because He made billions?
Yeah, a bunch of them.
Yeah. But it does make sense that if God's given me something to say or do in the world, the further part of hearing is, how is He asking me to do it?
Yeah, I mean, because you just stepped on a pet peeve of mine. I am so tired of the God told me to do this. We're just going like, gosh, it. Unfortunately, if I take you at face value, either your hearing is pretty like faulty or minor, or God's kind of dumb in what He communicates, because there's no clarity of what to do about it. There's no understanding what it really means. It's more just used often as a manipulator of, see, you gotta know this is important because God told me. And it's like, yeah, but for who?
Yeah, and God told me you're going to do this the same way you did with the shack.
And he didn't tell me.
Yeah.
He forgot to communicate that to me as well.
That would be part of it. But here's, again, the lesson I think people so misunderstand. At the end of the day, we have now a system that we can plug anything into and make it work.
No, we don't.
We weren't just part of a story. We were part of an unfolding story. And God asked us to be involved, and we were. And that resource changed what that was all about. But it doesn't mean you and I can take anything we want to, put it through the same machine, and get the same result. We both know
better than that. I can guarantee that, because we didn't even know what we were really doing and where we were going with it.
That was literally one step at a time.
In terms of just honest reality, and I think so much of, I love the adventure of this. The fact that, you know what? At times I used to think that I could see that panoramic vision. I knew where all of this was headed. And thus, I could be the general that directed all the troops.
If you listen to me, I can tell you
everyone what to do.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, well, whatever that was, God decided to hoodwink me in a different dynamic where it's like, guess what? I'm going to ask you to do this. And my first knee-jerk response is, well, where's that leading to? Because I want to test, see if it's worth doing. And it's like, I know the voice. And you're just going like, I'm pretty sure you asked me to do that. Now the real question is, will I? Not, what do I get out of it? I just recognize so oftentimes my impulse is, well, what do I get out of it? And I'm making a decision based upon me as opposed to a relationship with Him, and He's asked me. And I just go like, I think it's fine to test stuff, but I realize He's done something different in the last number of years where it's just like, hey, Brad, would you just do this? And I've known the first question when I say, well, what's in it for me, typically takes me in a wrong direction.
Oh, I would think
it,
so.
It starts to warp just the simplicity of doing the thing of, oh, okay. And I know that the joy that I'm experiencing now is I'm not really asking a whole lot of, well, then what's in it for me, or what do I get in it? And, you know, if I do then what? It's more like, okay. And then you watch it, something unfolds. I'm not robbed of the incredible payoff of being able to look back and go,
wow, God, how did that happen? I know I'm involved. I mean, I don't like the sort of mythical life out there that it's just all God. And it's like, nothing's ever all God.
There's that lisp again. What are you
doing?
Sorry.
I don't want to pick on the lisp people.
Really?
But stop it. That whole bit of, it's just all God. It's like, no, I don't think it ever is. It's always God with somebody.
And what I hope people hear in that is that in this adventure, it's not that God gives you a roadmap and for the next 3 years you're following his step-by-step instructions.
Yeah, I'll meet you at the end.
There is a lot of frustration in that story. There's a lot of, God's put this on my heart, but I don't know where it gets out. I don't know how it gets out. I try some things, and they don't work. Sarah and I used to have this little game I play. When I first started writing, I'd write these magazine articles and spend all this time. It's all speculative. You send it off to the magazine, or you send a book out to a book publisher, and they send it back going, thanks for sending your submission, but no, it didn't fit our needs at the time, kind of thing. And I had this cathartic need to take envelope or carton, in some cases, and slam it into the trash can. Just, I will never write again. I will never do, And Sarah and I did.
Quite reactionary.
Because Sarah usually, I manage to think that trash cans have an infinite space in them. That if you keep pushing down hard enough,
you get more, yeah.
You can. And if you balance things on top just right, you don't have to take it out near as often. But Sarah ends up emptying most of the trash cans in the house. So I'd come back from somewhere and my trash can would be emptied. And there would be the manuscript or manuscripts laying in the bottom of the trash can. Sarah was great. She knew I just needed the cathartic. But at some point, I'd pull it back out again. And I think that's true of any journey we go on with God. I have the tendency to, when God tells me what he wants me to do, that I assume I know the how. And the first, used to be, the first 15 hows I tried weren't it. So you just get more and more frustrated.
I'm out of bullets. Anyone got another bullet? How do I do this?
And the frustration is, for me, was always directed at God. What? Doug, you asked me to do this. Now, nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm going to go and eat worms. The whole, down on yourself kind of deal. And now I'm much better at, I might now do one or two things that I think, this is obviously what God wants. But when you move to something you obviously think God wants, and it doesn't bear the fruit,
it tends to be obviously what I want. And I recognize, I'm not God.
But here's what I want to say. Back up. Just go, that wasn't it. Not, God's a horrible, cruddy person, or I'm a horrible idiot. He obviously doesn't want to bless me in any way. Just go, that wasn't the door. I thought it was. So, God, is there a different door I'm missing? And I think with a lot of these things in my life, it's true now. You'll knock on a lot of things, cast a lot of bread on the waters, and then something comes back and a door opens, and that door leads to another door. And this is really an adventure that you don't control from the beginning, and you don't get a roadmap. It's every day. Okay, God, that didn't work, so what's next?
And the value I see in that I used to be frustrated with, is it allows me to maintain a posture of constant dependence. Not weakness, not I can't do it. It's more like I can't run out ahead of him without him. And my tendency, I think the more capable you are, the more likely it is you do this. And I think one of the things that I think is important to kind of highlight in what you're saying is God may have told you to do something. And that might be absolutely correct hearing. But the how, you might not get that right. That doesn't mean you didn't hear.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean it's an all or nothing. Like, well, the minute I get it wrong, it's back to square zero. It's like, no. Take perhaps a step back, and maybe there's a different way. I mean, I love in the scriptures where the Apostle Paul, he's hindered going this direction. He's hindered going that direction. He's hindered going the other direction. So he discerns the Lord is leading him for the last direction available. He's going, wow, what incredible apostolic discernment. And you just go like, you know what? Sometimes life is like that.
I would say often it's like that. Rarely is it, I heard God wrote somebody, the door wide open, people came and did all these wonderful things for me. That's not the story. The story is always, had a thing in my heart. And some of that thing in my heart doesn't bear fruit. I know people don't want to hear this.
For a long, long, long,
12,
long time.
15, 20 years. You can't read the Old Testament and not get that, you know.
But most people don't.
Abraham, you're going to have a kid. And you know what? Better not to have that promise than to wait 25 years for a kid that doesn't come till the 26th year.
Harder to have that promise.
Better not to have it is my point.
No, but
don't torture me, God. Don't tell me you're going to do something 25 years from now.
I don't even think
Do it then.
I don't even think you believe that, because the reality is
well, I do.
Okay, fine. I don't, because I do know, when God has told you that, the time and patience, through faith and patience, and they never bring up the patience part, we inherit the promises.
Yeah.
But I do know that really is the crucible out of which maturation and wisdom and depth happens. And to be able to have the fact that there's a knowing, there's a knower, there's a reality that says, you know what? When I'm tempted to forsake everything in the pain of the delay, to be able to have the anchor that God did say, if you can get past the reaction of your pain and wanting to rail again, those are some of the most valuable handholds of all of life as you climb in this journey. It's like, you know what? I got a handful of those things that are just going like, I don't know a lot, but I do know that. And those have been forever anchors for me.
Yeah, if you can believe the promise in the face of it not having any evidence, which is what Hebrews 11 is exactly
saying.
But if not, if the promise is only a promise when it's fulfilled, then the promise becomes incredibly frustrating.
And see, I think right there, that's profound. Because that isn't the way it was ever taught to me. It's your evidence of your faith is the fact that you see it came past.
You got the outcome you wanted.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, oh, give me a break. That flies in the total face of that chapter. Chapter 11 is like, excuse me, there's a whole bunch of people that were told this and died not inheriting. So, old great Hall of Faith chapter, I think the way the teachers have taught it, no, that's bunk.
I did the stats on that chapter one time. 85% of the time when God tells someone to do something, it led to greater hardship, greater stress, greater trouble. 85% of the faith chapter's own litany.
I wonder if that was written like, you know, the truth in packaging laws is on your little can of soda pop God told me. How many people would actually pick up that can and declare God told me? If they recognize, you know what? That's what a lot of that is. And I think the reason that is so true is because I think God speaks a lot of times on a need-to-know basis. I don't need to know a lot of things. I'm curious about everything. But I don't need to know a lot of things in terms of concrete, direct revelation stuff. I just think most of what I'm doing is not that critical. He's more interested in the shaping of my character. When there are some important things, I do need to know that. And with that comes often greater clarity of what he said. And with that is often greater challenge for the obedience, greater time frame,
patience
for the fulfillment.
Yeah.
You just go like, with greater clarity comes greater everything, and most of that is harder. And that's why you need to have had that clarity.
And you need to break the idea that, well, if it's God, it should all be easy and just fit naturally into place.
Yeah, I think so many people, when they're trying to get, like, well, God said it, to them, that's the guarantee. That's my money-back guarantee. God said, therefore, and I'm going like, I would love for you to fill in the therefore. What do you really think is promised in the God said? Because I don't fill that in anymore. I used to use that as the, well, you must obey me, and it will come to pass.
Well, part of it we look at how God, and I think this strikes to the heart of what covetousness is without trying to invoke law here. We look at what someone else has, and we want that way. I get emails probably two or three a year from people who would love to live the way I live. And I can understand some of my life why people would want that.
You must be looking from a distance.
But in terms of particularly Mormon ministry types that, you know, don't have a teaching venue, don't have a, you know, place that they feel like they've got things to share. They want to help people grow. They don't have it. They don't want to get another job. They want to be vocationally, but they're tired of the pastor thing. And I've had many of them write saying, you know what, I'm really doing what you said about trusting God for my provision, and now I'm 3 months behind on my house payment, and I'm about to lose my home, and I want to know when this kicks in. And I just, my heart just breaks for people like that. It does. I just, with the best of intentions, with the best of hopes, I'm just going to go wake up every morning and do what God says and trust Him to provide for me, because that is the way Sarah and I have lived for the last 15 years. But please hear, there was 25 years of living before that, or 20 years of living, of learning to live inside that space where it's not, I just do whatever I want and trust God to pay for it, but where every day I'm listening to Him, doing what He's called me to do. And some of that God providing for me was Wayne painting someone's house, or Wayne doing a bridge builder thing, or there were lots of ways God provided for me. It wasn't just I sat and studied the Bible all day.
No, and you're
and
also
hoped God gave.
You're also an incredible planner, and I'm going to bring it in before the deadline guy. I mean, there's a lot.
Well before the deadline.
There's a lot of intentionality about what you do, that when you just say, well, I just, you know, listen and wait. It's like, yes, I know that. But there's also a lot of decisions you make based upon the clarity that comes out of that listening that you then are very meticulous about doing. And I don't think a lot of people hear that and understand that. Most of the time, I was like, well, I just listen for the wind. Please fill in the blanks of reality. It says, you know what? And there's a practical farmer that you grew up as that knows a lot of reality of going like, well, if you're not putting that in the ground, nothing's going to be growing in 3 months.
Yeah. And I would say to people, if you have sent out 20 manuscripts and been rejected 20 times by publishers, don't give up. That's not even a start.
Yeah, we went to 26 or something.
That's not even a start. And even 26 is not much. I mean, that. And the same thing, if you miss a house payment, you've got to already consider that how I'm following Jesus here may have more to do with what Wayne wants for his life than what God's telling me to do.
Oh, bingo.
Because providing for your family is part of it. I tell him, don't ever. Every financial decision we made when we put ourselves at risk at times, and we did, was always, did we have a way to pay for this if God didn't come through the way we thought He would come through? Am I willing to embrace the consequences for being wrong here?
See, yeah,
and Sarah and I had that conversation so many times.
See, that balances out with the general revealed call to live responsibly. That's not an antithesis of living in faith. I don't think those are at odds.
I don't think they ever should be. Absolutely.
No. But I do think that, sadly, the way they get communicated is like, well, if I'm doing the responsible thing, well, maybe I'm not doing the depending on God thing. I'm just going like, wait a minute. In my brain and in my heart and walk, it's
and
like, those are never contradictory.
And in Scripture, they're never at odds.
No, because you've got the faithful ant in Proverbs. They're just like, what are they doing in summer to prepare for winter?
And you got Paul saying, if you don't work, you don't eat. I mean, the New Covenant just saying, hey, people just want to, you know, be full-time Jesus people and beg money off other people. And that's not how God provides. That's not how that works either. But I do. I know lots of people who find a way to live inside their calling and gift, and God resources them in ways. But that never comes easily. I mean, Sarah and I talked a number of times saying, let's do this 3 more months and see if it keeps working. We couldn't see the long range. I don't know how this works a year from now, and not where we were at the time, and not with the amount of money coming in. Every month we got saved by some outlandish thing that happened, even though we weren't ever telling people we had a money need. We did one time, and as I said before, that was ugly. But for the most part, we never did. And yet God would do it. But, you know, the little surprises way God did it don't translate into, well, He's not going to do that every month.
Well, I think that's where the fallacy is. I don't think we have the capacity to just live based upon biblical principles alone. I know we've talked about this before.
Absolutely.
The difference between faith and presumption is the guy that has some faith actually heard something. The guy
actually that, did. Didn't make
actually,
up something.
Yeah, actually heard something. Yeah. And regardless of if he got it all right.
Right.
It's the fact that there's a voice behind that. I mean, I don't think faith, I think one of the most encouraging understandings about faith is faith comes with hearing. And that tells me, it's not my muscle, it's God's voice. It's like it comes as a package gift. I spoke, and with it is a package called faith, that if you'd hear it, and it's interesting, in Hebrew, the word to hear and obey are the same one. You know, Johnny, take out the trash. Johnny's playing his little PlayStation. Did Johnny hear Mommy tell him to take out the trash? Well, today, no.
Probably not.
So the reality is, I think there is that requisite of, I have a heart to obey. Not what's in it for me, but I have a heart to obey. I think your capacity, what opens your ears, is I actually will free my life to respond. I think the way so many people have ordered their lives, God really doesn't have any access. You're too busied out. What if he was to direct you? Where in your life and schedule could he? And I go like, gosh, in all of my planning, I recognize with every single last little best laid plan, I go, and God, you're free to completely ignore or mess this up. This is my best guess right now, trying to take the things I believe you've said, and I'll order it this way. But feel free to mess it up.
That's why circumstances, I think, are an important part of how we unfold the adventure with us. So if God has put something on my heart, now the experiences I'm going to go through circumstantially are either going to affirm that, or they're going to be closed doors to get me to redirect my thinking, because none of us here completely right. None of us get the whole thing nailed down. So part of it, and it may be that, boy, my circumstances are absolutely opposed to this. And so, you know, Abraham, I guess, with having Isaac, could have said, I give up. But it wasn't something he could really give up on. He was going to have a baby no matter what he did, God was going to fulfill his promise. Well, I guess he probably had to keep sleeping with Sarah. That was probably very helpful. But in that
Hagar
process,
wasn't the best idea.
Hagar was a bad idea. But there are times when, yeah, God gives you a promise, and that promise is just taking time. Nothing circumstantially affirms it. But we're talking about creatively having a vision, a calling, something you're wanting to see unfold. I think circumstances, you know, if you feel like you've got something to say to the family, then part of that, realize, are there people in the family that want to listen to what you have to say? And if they're not, and I realize there are seasons of that. I remember lamenting one time to somebody in the middle of our journey here when I was a pastor and had all kinds of speaking engagements to go over. I had lots of people to talk to. As God took me on this journey of really transitioning how I think and live, and I think living inside more the reality of the gospel than I ever believed it to be true, I didn't have anybody who wanted to listen to what I had to say. I remember saying to one guy, I had more people to talk to when I had less to say than I do now when I actually feel like I have some truth. And that was true in that season, but that just by writing, communicating, doors began to open. People wanted to be involved with the kinds of things I was learning. And that's part of this process, too. It's just somebody needs to give me a microphone, or somebody needs to give me a published book, or someone. No, let God embrace the process. Let God open the doors as he desires.
But I also think, we have a North American culture bias that I don't think is true of all other cultures. It doesn't necessarily mean fame and fortune. God telling me to do something doesn't necessarily mean, platform upon which to now do this to the world at great mass. Therefore, it's better and more valuable. I think when God sometimes tells you something, you know what? It may just be for one individual. It may just be for yourself.
Yeah.
It doesn't diminish the value. It's like the whole parable of God leaving the 99 to go get the one. I don't think we ever take a value system out of that. Just says, you know what? Was God saying the 99, suck? They're not of no value? No. He's just saying, right now, for what I'm doing, for the purpose of that one individual, that is as important for me to go there as it is to tend for this flock here.
Yeah, and I've said this a ton to people lately. I felt like my life was in a more fruitful place 3 years ago, before the shack. The kinds of travel I got to do and the people I got to talk to, I think was more fruitful for the kingdom in its quietness, in its outside the spotlight. Now I show up in communities, and there's a different scale of people that want to come because of the shack and because of my two books being in the back of it. That has drawn me into a different place. And this would be more the place the Wayne of 20 years ago would have coveted. That's the place I want to be. But now that I'm there, I'm trying to find a way to get back in the other space, because sitting around 20 people in a living room has 10
you can accomplish far more.
Has 10 times the power in a kingdom sense than Wayne speaking to 1,000 people from a stage. Now, I know people just go, I don't think that's true at all, but it is true. Absolutely. The engagement of conversation and dialogue is an environment 10 times more valuable to see people changed than me on a stage talking to people who are taking notes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of my life right now is, I don't know how God – I don't know that I have to move back into that. I'm not trying to recapture something from the old, but neither do I want to say this space is better. I can be more effective for the kingdom of God here, because I don't think that's true.
I think our culture has an interpretive bias that, you know, bigger is better. The more is always where God is leading something, quote, fruitful and success. And I'm just like, Jesus – the longer he went, the fewer crowds he had, the fewer smaller circle he had. He's like, I don't think either of those as a principle is ever going to give you correct guidance.
No,
the issue is, God, what are you doing with me?
And I think the most effective men on the planet that I have known in my life are not men who have big followings, big books, big platforms. The men and women I know who've really walked this journey just live very quiet lives in their communities, and they touch an incredible number of people one at a time in twos and threes, helping people see the journey, loving people who are broken. That, if you want to celebrate, what does the kingdom celebrate? That's what the kingdom celebrates. Very rarely do you have this breakout, big the shack thing or whatever. And that's a deal. That God's hand is also in that.
Yes, absolutely, wonderful and glorious.
But I'm saying the most mature men of God I know and women of God are not confused by the fact that scale equals success.
And I think if we knew that better.
And Jesus wasn't either.
Our hearing might improve.
Yeah, I think it would. And I want to say one other thing. I know we're kind of running a little bit late here, but you talked earlier about that. You know, God seems to talk to us on a need-to-know basis, or as we joke about in terms of provisions of time, God always seems to provide at the last minute. And I've heard people talk about that, and here you do this, but I hear people talk about that in ways it's kind of like, well, what's up with God? I mean, he just like to torture his children, let them all hang out there till just when you need to know it, or just at the last moment. You know what I think is behind all that? Is that God knows the greatest gift he can give you is for you to be comfortable inside a relationship of trust with him.
Absolutely.
That isn't based on, I've got to know where this is coming from, or I've got to see the 5-year plan on that thing. I think God, the greatest gift I'm experiencing right now of the life of God is, I get to wake up in him, and I don't have to know how that is going to sort out, or how that is going to get done. I just get to live inside his reality today, and he'll give me today what I need to have today.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that's the greater joy. Our false security. I can only be secure when I know how all these unknowns will work out. You're in the wrong kingdom. This kingdom will drive you nuts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hopefully in that.
I look at the confidence. My confidence of hearing is not in the skill and developed maturity of my hearing. It's in the fact that he's a great communicator. And so on a need-to-know basis, it's the fact that when I sometimes haven't heard, I take a restful comfort in going, you know what? If my heart is open and willing to obey, he's a great communicator. If I don't know, maybe I don't need to, and I can be at peace as opposed to anxiously fretting.
And that's what a relationship allows, that a system never could. Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.